small mid-cap private equity.
So the small mid private equity search was similar to the process we went through for the real assets private equity search that we presented back in April. And again, this is a search for a fund that selects private equity funds, very similar to Adams Street and Pathways structure. If you invest just in a private equity fund, you get much more concentration. These funds typically invest in 10 or 15 companies. If you invest in a fund of funds, they may have 10 funds, so you have 100 to 150 companies. And if one company fails, it's not as not as devastating for you. And companies do fail. So this is the semifinalist report. We had 39 candidates. We narrowed them down to semi-semifinalists for your consideration. Mm-hmm. Seven. The process we went through starts on page one. We sent out 33 RFP questionnaires in June, and those are all folks that we were aware of or people that contacted us after this search became public as the word got out. After we sent out those RFP questionnaires, we had six other firms contact us, and we sent questionnaires to them as well. We wanted to get anyone who was a credible candidate to be considered, so we brought those in as well. So we had 39 total firms that we considered. We put together a large spreadsheet with all of their performance data. We compared their performance data to their peer group performance data. So if they had a fund that started in 2002, we compared their 2002 returns to the group returns for 2002. We used the Cambridge benchmark, which is, I think, the best benchmark out there to do that. So that way we looked at their excess returns versus the top quartile of that year for all of their funds. And it makes quite a difference, because if you had a fund that started up in 2002, that probably did fairly well. If they started up before the tech bubble happened and the market bubble happened, they would be buying companies at much higher prices. If they started later, 2005 or so, they'd be paying much higher prices. So you see pretty high correlation to the market that they were starting up in. We also looked at scale. Was the manager big enough to take an allocation from Contra Costa, $50 or $100 million? And using those criteria, the return screen, their scale, we were able to trim the list down to 16 candidates. And the candidates we considered most closely are then at the bottom of page one.
A question at that step.
Yeah.
Ocean Avenue?
Yes.
They were eliminated because it's too large of an investment for them? I read here. Can you explain what was good about them that you thought was good, and why too large for them?
I really like the firm. I think they're very talented. And in talking with Tim, we thought we probably should put them aside and do them as a separate consideration. Do you want to discuss
that? We may or may not bring them forward
on an individual basis.
As an individual smaller investment.
Keep in mind, one of the goals that staff laid out before the board authorized the search was, the idea was get a third fund-of-funds manager to complement Pathway and Adams Street, but somebody we could be re-upping with probably every 24 months, like we do with Pathway and Adams Street. I think
not compatible to them, opposite of them, right?
Different.
On different cycles, but yes. somebody who's going to be in the market or going to have a vehicle available to us on a pretty much fairly consistent basis. Ocean Avenue looks very interesting. Hard-pressed to see that they're going to be in the market every 2 years fundraising.
Yeah, it's just not as big a firm, but I thought they had a great strategy and impressive people. And
all right.
So we wanted to carve
them up to do separate. They do direct deals, too, in addition to fund-to-fund. So they're a little bit different, and we're going to address them, but separately.
Yeah. They have more concentration. And also, as well as some of the folks we have here, have shorter track records, but they have a relatively short track record. But very senior people. They've been doing this a long time.
And HarborVest is one that we eliminated. And I was very impressed with HarborVest, but the turned out to be a fair amount of overlap with the existing managers. So that's why they went by the wayside.
Yeah, we really didn't appreciate that might not fit until we did the overlap analysis. And I'll cover that a little bit down the road. Next, I'd like to cover the pros and cons for the firms, which starts on page 4. Bay Hills is one of the newer funds. It's been in business since 2007. It has a 12% hurdle rate, where the others have, I believe, an 8% hurdle rate when they have a hurdle. So what that means is they don't get a profit participation until they've made 12% return for you. And so that shows you their confidence of, well, probably confidence that they can hit high returns, and certainly an intention to hit high returns.
A little bit small, a little bit new.
Yeah.
How new?
They started in 2007.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're the shorter track records we have, they started in 2006 or 2007.
Okay.
Fort Washington is owned by an insurance company, so a lot of the investment money comes from an insurance company. And because of that structure, the employees don't own the firm. One of the strong pros for Fort Washington is they do have the lowest fees. They don't have a performance fee, and they've got quite low fees. And I'll cover all that in detail. So I want to hit the big pros and cons to put everything in context. Gold Point is also owned by an insurance company. Its track record started in 2007, so it's one of the shorter track records. It did lose a senior member of its investment team earlier this year, so if they were someone to consider, we want to do the due diligence on that.
How come it's a con for Fort Washington to be owned by an insurance company, but it's a pro for Gold Point? Unless I'm reading
it. Well, it's basically we like it when the employees own the firm.
Right, that's what I got.
If the insurance company owns the firm, that's a negative. In Gold Point's instance, it's a complicating factor, which is a negative, but that insurance company, it puts money in to help get the fund started. So they, it's like having a big brother with a big wallet.
I'm like Scott, still asking
It's an excellent question. And it's both a negative and a positive for Gold Point.
Yeah. And some of these you can put in the pros and the cons, but you want to highlight them somehow to folks who are looking at this. Hamilton Lane is the next one. It's a very large firm. It's done a very good job. It's got good references. It's a solid firm. It does tend to invest in larger companies. We'll see that later in an analysis, that the companies are not truly small, mid-sized. Well, they're more mid-sized.
But they came out very well in our analysis.
Yeah. Very, very credible firm. Great references. Horsley Bridge is a San Francisco-based firm. It's got the longest track record of all the candidates. It's got really good returns. The references were really impressive. The references were people like Tim. They're chief investment officers. They're smart folks. So they gave us very insightful people to talk to as references, and they said really good things. So they're a very strong candidate.
The irony, though, is that it looks like they've got a long track record, but it looks like they're, in essence, a new company. The principals have left, and 13 people have left for a variety of reasons.
Right.
But it's like, has passed any
Phase
suggestion
two.
Of what the future looks like. It looks like a new company to me.
Well, and I asked him about the 13 because I almost fell out of my chair when I read this. Like, what happened to everybody?
How many
and
people work there? I mean,
yeah.
13 compared to 100? 13 yeah. compared to 20?
It's a medium-sized firm.
Which
I think it's
means?
About
50?
Probably a little less.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's a lot of turnover.
But a lot of the turnover were associates, so people coming there to be after graduating from college for 2 years and go to business school, which is a pretty common path. So, as I said, so how many senior people turned over? And the senior turnover was really all planned retirements. Chief operating officer. And that was multi-year planning that they were going to leave.
I'm not saying there are negative reasons that they left. It's just that you don't have the same company.
There are a number of folks who have been there throughout. So there's still a pretty good-sized core of senior people.
Well, and when you get impressive reference calls, that tends to dampen my concern about the turnover.
Yeah. And I had a pretty significant conversation with them about that. Like, who are the 13? And, you know, why did they leave? And the few senior people were well planned in advance. So,
Marty, were you comfortable with the senior people still there as having long experience with them? stepping into the roles of the founders that retired.
Yeah, lots of folks on the investment committee have been there a very long time.
Well, and Tim likes them.
Tim Watson. Okay.
Well, I'm not as familiar with them, but.
Yeah, these folks have been around for a very long time. I've always been impressed by them.
Well, and they're in San Francisco, too, though.
Yeah, they're local.
Yeah, they're literally right down the street from us. I've been to their offices and met with them. And their numbers are very strong. So a very credible candidate.
How long is or has the new CEO or principals that matter to us been with the firm in terms of the planned retirements? If you've had this kind of turnover and the founders have retired, who stepped up and how long have they been there?
I didn't go through the whole investment committee with them, but certainly there are a bunch of folks that have been there more than 10 years, a good bunch.
But they did have a planned succession.
Yes.
That's always a good thing, because sometimes
it is planned multiple years before the partners retire.
Yeah, I'm having the same reaction Jerry has had to this, that I've actually experienced this in real life, where firms change, literally, by reason of founders leaving or principals leaving, and it's a new company. We shouldn't think otherwise, is my take.
Although this is the last three years, not as opposed to last year, it's the last 3 years. That's
yeah. You got two things going on there. You've got the associate turnover, which I don't know if that's aberrational or whether that's normal.
Normal.
There's a lot of in and out in a lot of firms and a lot of businesses. I don't know. I'm more concerned about if all of the founding members, whether or not long plan are gone. They're gone, and it's a new company.
If you look at page 82 of our report, at the bottom, you can see that while Fred Berkowitz is on his way out, you can see that a lot of these people have been here 18 years, 10 years. It's an ongoing process. If you've been around as a firm for a long time, people eventually go away.
Correct. Yeah. You have to take the long view, and I appreciate that, Bob. It stood out.
Yeah. Well, it would be, to our mind, it wouldn't exclude them as a candidate. It would be something you might focus on in the interview process.
What I like is that they've been with the same firm all those years.
Yeah.
They even though they've got a lot of years of experience, it isn't just recently.
And I did pull up, it's on page 8, the table that shows how many employees they have. Total employees are 51.
Oh, okay.
And there's 17 people on the small mid investment team. It gives you some sort of perspective.
Yeah, but they had 15 the year before, and they lost 5 that year. In 12, they lost 5 and only gained 1. I mean, that's a lot of people.
Some places, I guess I don't know the investment business as well as other businesses, but it strikes me that there's trying to figure out the politically correct way to say this. There is an approach to associates and businesses that can be a very, very rigorous time, and only those who can survive and are stalwart, sort of the business Darwinism, they remain, the others go. And if that's the plan, if that's the firm culture and the plan, then I guess I'm less troubled by the turnover. In other words, is there a churn 'em and burn 'em? Is there a real desire to weed out those who can't survive the,
It has been historically pretty standard in the industry for people to come out of college and then spend 2 years at a place like this and then go to business school. Two or three. So some people might not go back to business school, but many do, and that's an intentional process. And then after business school, they may come back. That's a very common way to get smart people who work really hard for not a lot of money.
Gotcha.
Interesting. It's a norm, unfortunately. Well, I don't know if it's unfortunate. It's just it is how they do it. But certainly that's on the due diligence list, too.
Kind of like the DA's office.
Yeah. New class.
Well, they used to do 2-year contracts, right? Didn't you guys?
Now we do 3.
You do 3?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the investment universe
the difference between these candidates and, say, a Pathway or an Adams Street? I mean, Adams and Pathway really don't, I mean, they've invested in very small or funds that invest in very small companies and larger companies. Is the universe different?
Yeah. The idea was add a complement to those two, but tilt the universe towards smaller companies. Okay. Adams and Pathway would both, rightfully so, claim that they get the entire universe.
Right.
Very true, however, the scale of the firms is going to dictate that they're probably going to be overweighting the larger companies. I don't think either one of them has backed themselves in the corner with a capacity constraint and they can only do large, but they're big knowledge brokers. They're going to get the big deals and they're going to do them very well, and they're going to get some small ones in there too. The idea here was get somebody who focused more on the smaller to mid end of the range. And probably is, I won't say completely ignores the large ones, but that's not where they're spending the bulk of their time. That was one of the goals we set out.
So the fund manager universe would be different than either Pathway or Adams for,
yeah,
the most,
I mean,
for the most part.
There
may be some fund managers that offer an Adams style larger fund,
yeah,
and also offers a smaller.
Yeah, we went back and actually looked at what did Adams Street invest in, yeah, which exact partnerships, and how much money was put in there. Same for Pathway, mm-hmm, and then same for all the candidates.
Yeah.
And so when we got to HarborVest, we found that if you put a dollar to HarborVest, you're getting more than 50 cents of duplicative,
right,
investment. And that's why we took them out of the search.
And if you take a look at pages 12 and 13, you'll see this data, the overlap data there.
Yeah.
It's something new, but we felt it was going to.
I'm glad
one of the explicit goals here is to add diversification,
right,
relative to those two. We can have best in class, but if it's not giving us diversification, you know, we could have just upped our allocations.
I'm glad you added that. That was really interesting to me, that piece.
And so, you know, I think you're always going to see a spectrum. In some ways, always going to be at the top. And in this case, Fort Washington is probably the most duplicative. But there, you're talking 20% or less,
uh-huh,
generally speaking. So, and as Marty said, Horsley Bridge, or not, sorry, no, HarborVest, great firm, just didn't really drive it on the diversification side. I think everybody on this list, at least I'm comfortable that they're giving us true diversification relative to Adams and Pathway.
And with regards to access to managers and funds, is there going to be a problem with a newer manager or these newer candidates having that access? Because what Adam Street and Pathway have always told us, you have to have a long-standing relationship. There's great demand to get into these funds, and
with private equity, it's so relationship driven. Less so today, but still it's relationship driven. So I'd be less concerned about the age of the firm than the age of the contacts with the key people in the firm. If the firm's been around for 10 years, but the key people on the investment committee have been in the industry for 25 years, it's that 25-year number that dictates the relationships that they're going to be able to drive into the fund.
Okay. In the process of these kind of managers are looking at smaller funds, so they are relationship because they're people that maybe we used to work at one of the bigger funds and set up a deal. So if you know those people, that's good, but it's easier probably to get into those newer funds. So it's more of an opportunity for somebody to start up an entity.
Okay.
I think there's still all things equal, would you prefer a well-established firm with just, you know, a great process, everything runs in lockstep? Sure, absolutely. But I wouldn't necessarily discount the smaller firms tremendously. You give them a ding, because they're probably not as well established, it's probably not as polished of a process. But I wouldn't necessarily be concerned that they're backing themselves into third quartile funds, because that's the only thing they can get access to. Let's put it that way.
And they're very motivated to make it work. I mean, it's their baby. So there's a sense of pride, as well as if it doesn't work, their career has been really damaged by doing, mm-hmm, that. So you've got a really motivated team. You have key man risk, key person risk. If one of those key people or two of those key people get injured in a ski accident or whatever, it's a problem. If you have a huge firm with an investment committee of 12 people, it's not so bad.
two people getting injured in a ski accident.
No company ski trips are allowed here.
Nothing else.
High risk behavior.
Okay.
For JP Morgan, we have clients invested with JP Morgan, and it's been a very good experience for them. Sigler Guff is a current manager for Contra Costa. They don't manage enough capital at this time so that it would be prohibitive to have them again in this role. But it's a relatively new venture for Sigler Guff. This fund started in 2006, but the results and the people are very impressive there. On page 8, we have an overview of the firms in terms of the amount of assets that they manage, both totally as a firm, of course, JP Morgan's huge, and then also in their small, mid, private equity offering. And next to that, we have the investment team showing how many people work on that small, mid, private equity team. And then the far column is the size of the current fund they're raising. So we've got a pretty good spectrum there. And I've had a bias against large funds, but as I did calls on the large funds here, Hamilton Lane and JP Morgan, the references came back very strong. I was concerned that Hamilton Lane didn't have a carry fee because that tends to lock in key people. And the way they've structured the firm and structured compensation, the senior employees have a lot of money in those funds. And so they're both motivated and locked in. So I didn't see it as an issue, even though I was concerned about it.
Page 9, you'll notice that J.P. Morgan has been around for 214 years.
Yes, notice that. That's right. You should have seen the ticker.
It was in the response, and I had to put it in. But we've got a spectrum here. We've got Horsley Bridge that started 25 years ago, and then Goldpoint that started 6 years ago. So we have a spectrum. The absolute returns for the funds are shown in the next couple columns. The median return, for example, for Bay Hills, they have two funds that have data. And so this is really the average of the two funds. It's shown as a 26.3. Then we compared.
You may be interested to know Excel. Yes, for the median. And there's only two data points. It takes the mean.
I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but that's what I thought that made sense. So that's how we did it. The net outperformance, the next two columns, that 18% is how much they perform better than their peer group for those years. And then the range is taking their outperformance versus their peer group for each of their funds and saying what was the very best outperformance here. So Bay Hills had one that outperformed by 34.4%. And the lowest outperformance was at 1.5%. So that's the range.
This is actually a little confusing because it says median, but it's versus the top. So how did their median fund do versus the 25th percentile performing fund in the database? So
yeah, it's how much better they are than the bottom of the top quartile. So this is the range, and this is the top quartile. How did that point? How much better than that did they do? So you'd like them all to be top quartile, and these folks have done very well.
So this strategy, the heading on the column here is small mid buyout funds. This is essentially the strategy for all of these managers?
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a miss because we're looking for small private equity, so right. It's not exclusively buyout. There's going to be some venture. There's going to be some special situations.
Okay.
So it's not a perfect, but it's the best one we have.
Okay.
But the lion's share of this is buyout.
Yeah.
For everybody.
On page 10, I laid out the fee schedule for the firms. So you can compare that just in the way that they would present it. You'll see the Bay Hills has a higher hurdle than the rest. Fort Washington has the lowest average annual management fee of all the firms. And Fort Washington and Hamilton Lane do not have, at least for direct fund investments, investments in other private equity funds, do not have a hurdle or carry. So this table is complete and correct, but it's actually hard to use. The management fee often ramps up and ramps down, so average isn't that useful. And when I presented the real assets search, Jerry Holcomb said, can you put together a table? And that, so I put together a table on page 11 for you.
I'm sorry, can we go back? Doesn't Singular South have the lowest average management fee? Am I reading this wrong? Number 9?
Yeah.
7 basis points.
Yeah. Not that that matters,
yeah,
but
they
I just...
do. When you add in the carry, it brings it up. But
I
yeah.
see.
Yeah.
Can,
yeah.
So I'm a little... I understand hurdle.
Yeah.
Carry, I'm not so sure I understand. So if it's... if it's take Singular Gup, if it's more than 8% in profit,
as they make a profit where you get more than 8% return,
yes,
they get 5%. And it gets a little bit complicated.
Okay.
If they have a much higher return, if they make 15% that comes to you, they will get 5% of all the profits. So at once you hit 8%, it starts being split. Some goes, the incremental dollar, some goes to them, some goes to you. So it could be 80-20, it could be a different ratio depending on the firm. But if they make enough of return, they'll get 5% of all of the returns, including the returns below 8%.
So you'll always get, well, you won't always get 8%, but they won't get any
if they,
carry
if, they
if
earn
you don't
8%,
make
8%. Right. Yeah.
But so if they make the 8%, though, did you just say that the carry then extends to everything?
It does it for all of these firms. If they make enough of a return, they will get 5%, not just of the profits over 8%, but of all the profits.
So it's not the increment, it's the whole.
Yes.
Okay, I was unclear on that. I thank you for clarifying that.
Marty, it could be helpful when we excuse me, get to the group we're actually looking at, and you put some materials together to have an example in a standalone section of it. It says something along the lines of, if we were to make an IRR of 14%, 12%, or 10%, 3%, what would the fees be?
Turn the page.
Page 11.
Turn the page.
Page 11 over there? All right.
Yeah.
That was quick.
Because when Jerry asked for that, so I thought, that's a great idea. I haven't seen it done that way, done before. But so what I did was say, what if, I'll just pick an example here, if Horsley Bridge had a 10% return, permits investments in funds, what fee would it get? So if you go to Horsley Bridge and go across to 10%, that 1.3% is what fee they would get. So your fee after their fee, take 10% minus 1.3, 8.7. That will be your return if they get 10% from the investments they make.
Right.
So with this table, you can get the pretty precise amount for 5, 10, 15, 20% return. And if it's in the middle, you can kind of interpolate. But if you don't do a table like this, it's very tough to figure it out. It's a huge spreadsheet. So.
And Karen, that's where you see Fort Washington drop to the lowest fee once you combine both pieces.
Yeah. I see.
So, you know, all in all, lower fees are a better thing. If you believe that each fund will give you the same result, then fees are the thing to pick. If you think there's a substantial difference between firms, then you have other factors to drive that decision.
So basically, there's two components, the management fee plus the carried interest, and the two are combined on page 11.
And on page 12, we have an overlap analysis where we took, as we mentioned before, we took all the firms, we took Pathways Investments, Adam Street's investments, and the candidate firm's investments, and look to see which one are in common and how big those investments were and how much that mattered. And the future won't be exactly like the past, but it's the best predictor we have. So you can see here for Bay Hills, you might expect something like a 17% overlap with the candidate firms.
When you say overlap, does that mean investing in the same kind of companies?
In the same underlying funds.
Eventually into the exact same companies.
Yeah. And if we're looking for diversification,
is not diversification.
The lower is better.
Yeah, the lower the better.
100% minus these numbers is how much diversification you have.
Yeah.
And the one on the...
So the best one here is Singular Gup that has only 3% overlap.
Right.
That would be the most desirable candidate.
Yeah. And HarborVest is not shown here because when we added theirs up, it was... far higher than all of these.
It was over 50 combined. Yeah, so a dollar gets more than 50 cents.
And again, that was your reason for
that was why out. We excluded
yeah.
that.
Got it.
Otherwise, we thought they were really strong candidates.
And these numbers are looking back. Going forward, it could
be
change,
different.
And there's no way to predict.
One of the things in private equity is you do get a high degree of autocorrelation from one fund to the next. So once a private equity fund-to-fund search has established a good, solid relationship with an underlying fund, you'll often see them invest in fund 3, 4, 5, 6. So it does tell you a little bit more than if we were looking at the public equity markets where they can trade in and out every day.
Once they have relationships they can trust that they've known over time, they've gone through, they'll go through hard times with these people and they get to know them very well. So if the opportunity looks good, they'll want to do it with that as a preference.
Just to be clear, so the 3% pathway on Bay Hills, excuse me, is in the 14% of Adams. Have to be.
Hmm? Yes. Okay. Yeah. An investment in Bay Hills of a dollar 3 cents would be redundant with the pathway investments based on the past.
Yeah.
And we put the data together on page 13 in chart one. So, on the vertical axis, that GP overlap is the same data from the table on the page before, table five, and then we got data from the companies and said, how big are the firms that you invest in? What's the median enterprise value of the companies that your funds buy? And so that's what this data is. So for example, I'll pick one that's close to a line here. Goal point, the roughly 275, means that the median size company that their investments end up in is $275 million in value. So you can see if you're looking for small to mid-sized companies, and that was the intention of the search, the Sigler Guff, Horsley Bridge, J.P. Morgan, Bay Hills have the both smaller-sized companies they're targeting, as well as low overlap. And the small company sector is less efficient. You know, if you're selling a huge company, you'll have many bidders, and they'll be very sophisticated. If you have a small company, you have less, and there's more chance also to improve the business. It may be a family business that you're buying. It may not be well run. It might be more of an opportunity to improve it. And a lot of the value, a lot of the profits are made, not just by buying businesses cheap. In fact, you probably want to avoid those investors. But people that can come in and really fix the business. You'll have someone who's really an expert and spent their career in retail, or really an expert in food distribution, and they'll come in and buy the business and make it a better business. And that's where the big upside is created, rather than buying it cheap and selling it high. It's not that easy to do that.
But you should point out, everybody on this chart falls within the confines of what we laid out as goals of the search.
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. Any questions other questions or considerations?
You want to go around the table and pick top two or three?
Bay Hills, Fort Washington.
So while we're writing the names up, we kind of glossed over it, not glossed, but went by quickly. I couldn't believe the malpractice, the E&O coverage for Bay Hills.
I agree. That would be a
I have deal more than
we would probably.
Well, you need more than that.
Thank you, Jerry. I was struck by that. How do you do that?
Someone's asking to increase it, probably.
Yeah. But how do they function in this environment that way? I don't get that at all. Seriously.
Under the radar.
Let's put it this way. Board actions can include requirements for changes to insurance coverage.
We typically would request a change in that amount.
Yeah. But I take it that just registers with you when you see that, right? I mean, you're used to seeing 20 million.
None of their investors have demanded more.
Yeah, if we put that down to client.
I mean, there's just no way their exposure can be matched to that coverage, period.
Don't you think that's an awkward requirement to suggest that it has to be at least as high as one of the board members' E&O coverage?
I don't know that I would phrase it that way if I was going to do it, but I found that odd.
Yeah.
Okay, why don't we go to the other direction?
All right.
Gabe?
I go with Bay Hills, Forest Lee, and then J.P. Morgan.
I'll go with Bay Hills and Horsley Bridge.
So I got those three?
Yeah, you can pick four, I would think.
I'm good with three.
Three's enough?
Yeah, thank you.
You might want to interview four, just because you interviewed three for the last search.
Okay, give me a minute, and when I'm ready, I'll tell you the fourth one.
Bay Hills, Horsley Bridge, and Sigmund Gulf.
And for me, Horsley Bridge is the only one that really sticks out that I think fits the profile with the everything considered.
I have Singular Guff, Horsley Bridge.
I'm definitely Horsley Bridge, Singular Guff. I'm torn on a third right now, so I'm gonna
hold on. Well, if you have two candidates, you can list them both.
Yeah, well, that's where I am. I'm torn on the third, too. I got two here sitting here, and I'll wait. Yeah,
is there anything else you can share with us? This was sort of brief for me, but is there any other points we've sort of missed or any other opinion on these?
I can give you my opinion.
We think we have some good candidates here. We got good feedback on both the two of the larger firms, the J.P. Morgan and the Hamilton Lane. The clients swear by them, and
for what it's worth, I went through this as well. It's a strong group. It's a very strong group. But the firms I felt that kind of best fit the goals that at least that I had in mind initially were Hamilton Lane, Horsley Bridge, and J.P. Morgan.
Okay, I'll go with Hamilton Lane on my fourth choice.
I'm going to go to J.P. Morgan with my third because I was struggling. So it may be good just to have the bigger firm in the mix for.
Put me down for Hamilton Lane. That was my third. I'm done.
I'm done.
Horsley Bridge, Singular Guff. My only concern with Bay Hills is the overlap, but their performance is very strong, so that would be my third, and then J.P. Morgan would be a fourth.
I'm going to go with Horsley Bridge and Singular Guff. And my rationale for not, otherwise not going with some of the others mentioned is their fee structure is substantially higher. And at some point along the way, these begin to really make a difference.
Yeah.
I agree with John. If we interview four, that's fine, but the Percy Bridge and Sigurd Guff are my top. I'm going to go in with a prejudice, I guess, is what I'm saying.
This may or may not influence anybody's choice, but I'd say the fees as stated here were the initial offer. If you really love a different process, we can explore alternative fee structures. We may not get it, but we can definitely explore it.
And I'm going with my choice, appreciating that fee thing, but on the diversification issue.
I had Horsley, Guff, and J.P. Morgan.
But we need to let them know if Horsley Guff comes in, if anyone shows up with acne.
That's not fair. There's adult acne. Don't even go there.
Well, I could be, but I just don't want to group that young. You know?
They could be smart.
Well, that could be.
12 months ago, we've never heard of Singular Guff, and now they've got products.
That's true. Well, we made a wise decision before, right?
We did.
Yeah.
We did. Okay, so what do we got? We got, looks like Bay Hills, Horsley, J.P. Morgan, and Singular Guff.
If we do four.
Four enough, or do you want to interview five and throw him?
Four is more than enough.
No, come on,
four is enough.
Does that pretty much cover the spectrum as far as, certainly you go from small to large.
Right.
You go from longer history to shorter.
Is there small?
Or Tim's three that he felt were the best.
Also,
he had Hamilton Lane, J.P. Morgan.
Okay.
And
not to argue against Bay Hills. Fine, we should listen to them, but
I think page 11 is kind of interesting because it does suggest that they will get the most in terms of fees at any one of these levels before we, not before.
Which one?
They'll get a higher split than anyone else.
Yeah.
Bay Hills will. I'm sorry, did I miss
No, Bay Hills.
Point that out to them when they come.
No, Bay
Hills. Well, it's just an interesting.
Their size, yeah.
See what they say. Or let Richard know.
But actually, Bay Hills is not the most expensive. They've got the highest hurdle, right? Is there something I'm missing there?
Page 11, the all-in fees.
They had that 12%.
So while they have the highest hurdle,
I think they've got a higher management fee.
They've got a higher management fee, so they're getting more.
That's not shown here. Okay.
Yeah, they have to make so much before they get any.
Your rate and your APR may differ.
Think about it with Pathway. We've got a fairly low management rate. We have no carried interest with them. Right. So what we pay is what we pay.
Jesus,
with Adams Street, we have a management fee and a carried interest. So
I guess the counter argument is if they get 2%, it's because we're getting 18, and we should be happy with that.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay.
Question. I personally don't like having carried interest here. I prefer the stronger co-investment. The underlying funds have carried interest. I'm hard-pressed to figure out how an allocator deserves a large piece of carried interest. So,
So as a newbie, what's the protocol that we follow for the interview of these folks? I mean, I gather they come in, they make a presentation. I don't know if they provide supplemental materials, but do you all Q&A first? Is it just us? Is it anything goes? What's the basic protocol?
We generally allow them 40 minutes or so, and we tell them that they'll be to allow 10 minutes for questions at the far end, but people are also free to jump in with questions along the way.
But to answer your question, we'll get a finalist report from Milliman. We will also get presentation materials from every presenter at that meeting, and then after the end of the presentation, we'll have the review. And
so we would, by that rough cut on time, if they go 40, we would have only 10 minutes to question them.
Well, you'll feel free to jump in during the presentation.
You can question any time during that.
So it's a little 30? Ambiguous.
You got a question? Just sit there and answer them.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm just the reason I'm asking again. This is the newbie thing. I don't know how you all do this. So I'm just trying to understand what we expect. Is this something where largely we're going to base the decision on how well they present, or is the idea to bring them in and then have everybody Q&A them, dumb questions, good questions, whatever questions?
Please ask any question that occurs to you.
I think it's part of the dating ritual. You know, they've passed the first thing now. I mean, you've presented the facts. We've been pretty, it's black and white. Here's this, here's that. It's how we're going to feel with them. I mean, it's like interviewing an employee to be, you know. They all could do the job, but how do you feel you'll work well with them? I mean, that's sort of where I think we're going to go.
And Scott, I'll be doing additional due diligence between now and the final presentation. So think about when they present to you, that's the date. I'm going to do a background check beforehand.
So is there an insider baseball sort of cheat sheet that gets distributed so that we have a little bit of an insider's view for probing?
I will distribute my notes and before they present to you.
What I might suggest, and I've always done, is I bring the
finalist
here.
Right.
They give us a booklet of their fund and how they, and then they talk to that booklet in front of us, and I have their figures and I have Bob's figures or Marty's figures, mm-hmm. and I do a comparison back and forth. If there's a question, I ask it as soon as I feel it,
okay.
and that's kind of how I have done it. I don't know how others do it, but that's kind of how I've done it.
So we don't have any compunction about like interrupting a presentation or at least it as we
go. No. Please feel absolutely free to do that.
Yeah. Okay,
it's important.
So is there a motion for the top, to interview the top four there?
Make a motion to interview the top four, Bridges, Morgan, Guff, and Hills.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Okay, so with four and three and the other category, we probably don't want to get them on the same day.
super sanity.
Yeah.
So are we back to calendaring?
We are calendaring.
Yeah, October 1st. Yeah, I'll be there.
Is there a reason we're, I know we're meeting as a special meeting on the 17th, is there a reason we're not meeting the 16th? I guess that's not a usual day.
It's not a usual date. There's three times a year where we have special board meetings to have the investment managers come in and present, and the 17th is already one of those.
I see.
I'm not sure you'd want 2 days in a row of that.
Yeah.
How about October 30th? How does that look for everyone?
I won't be here, but that doesn't...
Would you want October 30th?
It's okay by me.
It's okay by me.
That's fine.
I'm not good. Don't matter, but I'm not
here. Around check the rest of the calendar.
I'm okay.
You're not here, though?
I'll be in D.C. on water.
Potomac?
No.
It's an important issue.
Our water.
Don't send it down south.
No. Well, there's a way to get it there.
I'm sorry.
You are available.
I'm
back in D.C.
Okay.
So.
Not on the 31st, but I am on the 30th.
I'm good on the 30th.
Okay, yeah. So that could be one date.
Well,
which one do you want to
which
do?
Which date was that?
No, I can't.
October 30th?
30th.
I'm going to have to
Karen.
Be there for the work.
Okay, I'm going to put it on as FYI.
So...
Do we know which ones on which days are we going to do
well,
that later?
Well, international value maybe on that day. Which one do you think, Tim, should be first?
Well, are we going to schedule a meeting before the 30th, or the next meeting would be later than the 30th?
It'll be the 17th, I thought you said. Isn't that
we have a different one already on that day.
Oh.
We have a board meeting on the 23rd, right?
Yes, we do.
And we have a board meeting on the 17th of October.
Yes.
Second.
And now you want to go October 30th, right?
Yes. So we'll have four meetings in October.
Well, wow. What's the agenda? Okay. What's the agenda weight? Lack of a better term, on the two board meeting days, in other words, can you append the interview to the board meeting?
The second, we think, may be a little bit too early to get them here to present. The 23rd, we've got investment guidelines, the doctor's coming back, and what I'll update you on later is one of our other investments, this building. We need to do an update on that. If we wanted to extend that meeting, maybe we could do the three presentations on that day.
Yeah.
On the 23rd.
Okay. The international
October?
Group.
Yeah.
It would turn it into an all-day meeting, but
you'd have to plan on all day.
Okay.
And I can see what other things I can pull back from the 23rd and put on.
So we do the 4 on the 30th, and then do the 3 on the
23rd.
Yes. 23rd. So the 30th would be private equity, and the 23rd would be international value.
Okay.
So plan on the 23rd being a long day.
So we got 2nd, 17th, 23rd, and 30th.
Correct.
Okay.
And then we have a meeting the following Wednesday.
Sixth.
Because SACRS is the week of the 11th, so the board meeting in November is the 6th.
You're gone there.
Lucky this group gets along as well as it does.
It's
when? It conflicts with the Invesco, annual meeting.
Now I'm going to be at...
how many people are going to Invesco?
I'm scheduled right now.
Yeah. 1, 2.
And Louie's not available that day, so I can't.
But Jerry will be here.
So we're having a regular board meeting plus the interview. That's why it's all day. Okay, gotcha. Okay, so back to the 2nd.
October 2nd is already scheduled.
But anyway. He's going to Invesco.
We do have a meeting on the 2nd.
Wait, you're talking about the 6th.
On the 2nd of October, yes.
That's
there's
fine.
One scheduled, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, 6th of November, I can't make it. Jerry, you can't
actually
make it. Anybody else?
That's already maxed out.
Huh?
No,
it
says fine.
You can't make
it.
It's the 6th of November.
Wow. So do we want an agenda item for
I can't make it.
I'm out of town.
You're out of town, too?
Invesco is that week, so Jerry is out and Gabe is out.
Louie's not going to be
available. Louie can't vote for Jerry.
How many people are out?
Jerry and Gabe.
And Louie's not going to be available that day.
Louie's not going to be available.
I'm not available that day either.
Which one are we discussing? Excuse me, I'm sorry. Which
November
one are we discussing?
6th.
November 6th. We moved down another month. Okay.
I'm supposed to be at Invesco.
Oh, you're going. Are you signed up?
I'm on. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's on my calendar. I don't.
Do we sign up?
That's what. I must have written it down for that reason.
So you are headed down to that for a few days.
Yeah, I mean we can change it. To me, it's a question of relative importance. So if it's more important that we meet, then
that's what I'll do.
Well, if the board chair would like me to agendize that for potential change on the next agenda, we can do that.
Why don't we do that, and then
that secretary can.
We can see, because everything's getting jammed up here, and we do need to do these interviews, and that meeting does kind of get jammed because of SACRs every year.
We could move it up a day instead of the 6th. We could move it up to the 5th.
Is Invesco?
Because Invesco, I mean, I'm sure that the first thing is that evening, not that day, and we could fly down after the meeting. It's
lunch to lunch, starts at lunch. Lunch on Tuesday, but it's the,
so we could do a morning meeting though, yeah, and miss lunch, yeah, and but the only that's Board of Supervisor day 2, so I don't know
what day is that.
November 5th.
If we move the 6th to the 5th, it's not agendized for today anyway, so let me put it on the agenda.
Okay.
For
I'm
the
talking
next
October
meeting.
Or November.
November.
Now we're in November 5. Already.
Okay.
Because we've got so many in a row here.
Okay.
Let me agendize that, and we'll have that session.
Okay.
On October 2nd.
So we are having an October 2nd meeting.
So let me review October meeting so everybody has it.
Yes.
October 2nd will be our first of the month board meeting. October 17th will be our special board meeting with investment managers coming in to present. Typically, there's no action on that meeting.
And how long should we schedule for that meeting?
That can be, we have 4 right now, Tim, presenting.
17th.
So
till at probably 2.
Till 2 o'clock?
Max.
Would
two.
Be the worst case, yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Typically more like 1. On the 23rd, we have the second board meeting of the month. That one will be an all-dayer.
On the 23rd.
We may want to consider starting that one at 8:30 rather than 9, just to get some of the things going.
How's that work with everybody?
23rd?
I can do it. If you let me know ahead of time, we're going to do it. I can do it.
We're letting you know right now.
So all right. It's done.
So 8:30 a.m. on the 23rd.
I'm just adjusting out to
8:30. Okay. So that'll get us through a little bit better.
23rd. What are we covering on that day?
Start at 8 if you want. I don't
know. It's a regular board meeting.
Yeah, I could do that.
The board meeting on the 23rd will be the typical investment related, and because we moved the meeting to the 2nd, I'll also have some disabilities on that meeting. We'll have a review of this building, investment guidelines. We have some other business to take care of before the presenters, but that will be the other international value presenters in the afternoon.
Can I have something on my calendar that says to Sarah IFEBP on the 20th through the 23rd. Does anybody
the
know?
Conference. International that Federation of
International Foundation.
Yeah.
That is their annual conference that is in Las Vegas. We did not approve anybody to go. I think Gabe has, we're putting it back on.
Right.
On the agenda
today. I can come back on
the
22nd if I go.
Okay, so
okay, but I'm not going to go. Okay, great.
In the past, Richard has asked for, there's a Milliman Taft-Hartley group reception at that.
He isn't going.
That Richard has gone to in the past.
Let Gabe know about it.
If you would like to.
Yeah, what day is that?
This is an offline. Let's do that after. The 30th is the private equity presenters. We'll have 4 presenters. Let's, if you're scheduling, save till 2 o'clock on that one too, because we'll have 4 presenters. And then November will be the one on the agenda for possible changes.
And can you just go through November dates? Because
sure.
The 6th?
November, currently we have the 6th and we have the 26th. Which is the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. It's typically a quarterly meeting.
I can do that. Psst. Fabulous.
Okay.
Okay.
Awesome.
Everybody good?
Okay.
So you're
all right.
Actually, I'm going to go into that employee benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like. But, okay. Thank you, gentlemen. You also want to give us a heads up on the Paulson presentation that's coming
up? Well, this is primarily staff. We-